How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you? Long time no see.
We are so thrilled to see you with a microphone and headphones.
Oh, thank God.
This was not like a, you know, budget busting expense. I don't understand why people haven't made the leap.
Mm. Yeah, especially like when I see a celebrity being interviewed on like Good Morning America.
Yeah.
They're like yelling across the room into a laptop. Really? You don't have one person who knows like, anything about technology?
And doesn't like Good Morning America, like, don't they have a PA? They can like, you know, send one over there. So it's very, yeah, it's mind boggling to me that 18 months into this, we're still doing this silliness.
And so, but we have to acknowledge it because we have had a lot of experience with people, you know,
screaming into their computer.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So
well, it's such a pleasant listening experience that way.
All right. Well, let me do the formal introduction. He is one of our favorite comedians and one of our favorite guests. We haven't seen him in a while, but he used to be on our show all the time. He used to like us. We'll find out why he hasn't liked us much over the years. He got his start on Chappelle's Show. You've seen him on Netflix and Comedy Central. His latest stand-up album is called 60% Joking, and it's available now at all the places that you buy and stream music. Welcome our pal Christian Finnegan to the show. Hey, Christian.
Hello, Cooper. I have not seen you in so long, and I don't know what you're talking about, but I don't like you because I don't see my inbox ablaze with invitations. So
it's been years, so we need a doctor's note or something.
Yeah. Yes, we need to. It's like we got to get our shots before we...
Yeah, let's not let this lag again, because so Anthony, we'll tell you off the air all the stuff that's been going on with the show and with us and whatever, just because I think you'll be interested. But so Anthony and I were doing a morning show, and then we left and just for the hell of it decided to launch this podcast. Mm-hmm. And it's the number 44 entertainment podcast in the country. We're number 40 in Canada. We're number one in Fiji.
Well, I mean, you've always had a big Fijian following.
We're huge there.
Yeah, they love us in Fiji. You know, and we have, I'm not going to say it here, but like a ridiculous amount of downloads and listening audience that we are so excited to introduce. Well, they probably know you, but they don't know you with us.
Mm. Yeah, I doubt they know me. People don't know. Yeah, food gets cold. thank you. It's great to be here, and it's great to see you after all these years.
How has the comedy been going, especially during COVID? How'd you keep it going? Tell us everything.
A banner time for live performers, as you might imagine. You know, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, I somehow made it through the Irish potato famine or something. I mean, it was okay. There were various degrees of sort of outdoor and rooftop type shows going on at a certain point. And, you know, they were, I kind of would say that they were like methadone. It's not heroin, but it's better than nothing.
Right.
From what I've read and from based on my experience seeing Trainspotting. But it was... you know, it was a drag, you know, and it's hard because it was kind of, I was getting it from both perspectives because, you know, my wife owns a small venue in Queens called QED Astoria. And so I was getting it from the performer side of things, but also from the venue owner side of things. And, you know, it was definitely a challenge. And finally, a few weeks ago, we were able to get some grant money in that shuttered venue thing. And then it looked like the clouds had parted and everything was wonderful. And now Delta and who knows. So
right.
It's, you know, I occupied myself. I actually shot a down and dirty comedy special in the middle of the pandemic in QED's backyard. For 28 distanced and masked audience members.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just almost honestly, it was just something to keep me sane, just give me something to do and to focus on. And
right. And
that will be out hopefully in the fall. October, November is my hope.
What's it called?
It's called Show Your Work. And it is mostly a stand-up special, but there's like a 10% documentary element to it.
I love that.
But yeah,
I mean, you're feeling funny. I feel like it's been such a dark time that I always think about comedians, and you have to find humor in this like shitty time we're living in. I mean, are you always funny, or are you inspired, or how does that work?
I mean, some people would say, are you ever funny? But I say always. I'll take part-time would be a step up.
Right.
You know, I think so. I mean, a lot of times a lot, you know, doing, there were also a lot of Zoom shows, and so you would see other comedians and you'd watch their sets and stuff, and there was a lot of us sort of wrestling with some of the same premises, you know, that I'm going crazy and, you know, what am I doing with my life and I haven't left the apartment, you know, the same stuff we're all talking about. So, you know, it was always a little strange to see somebody, every once in a while I would see a comedian who just did his or her normal 10 minutes. As if, like, you know, so I was at a party last week. He's like, no you weren't. Not that, stop it, you're not fooling anybody. Hey, have you been to Disney World lately? No one has.
Yeah, so you gotta write a whole new set,
or you at least have to write new transitions. I was at Disney World once, something, right. You know what I mean? Like, right. You have to, but so, I mean, it definitely presents certain challenges, and there's a lot of material that you wrote during the pandemic that doesn't have much of a shelf life. Well, luckily, it's all coming back. Right as everything was coming back to life, I had heart surgery, which was, in May, I had open heart surgery. So,
did you really?
Are you kidding me? Whoa.
Yeah. So I kind of missed out on that 3 month, that sort of period where everybody was out having fun. I had an aortic aneurysm.
Oh, my God. Wait. Okay. So how did... I need to know all of this. I'm a huge hypochondriac. So prepare me. How did
you may have one right now.
No, she has no heart. So how did,
you gotta have a heart to have a
heart. They say that
problem.
If you have brown hair and glasses, you're at a higher risk.
Well, how did you discover it? What happened? What were the symptoms? Wow.
Well, you know, it was funny. Right around when the pandemic began in, you know, March, when I say began, when things started really shutting down for good around March 2020, I started having this sort of sporadic feeling in my upper chest. And at first I thought it was COVID, because at that point people didn't really know what COVID was or what it felt like. And so I started to get paranoid, but, you know, I had tested negative and et cetera and so forth. And then just over, but it wasn't like enough to really affect my life at all. It was just every once in a while, I thought it was heartburn. And just over about this next 6 months, you know, through the beginning, like right around the insurrection, honestly, is when I was like, all right, I have to get this checked out. Anytime I would get like overly stressed, or my, you know, my heart rate would get going, not really when I was exercising, but just when I was tense, I would notice it. And so right around, it's funny, on January 7th, the day after the insurrection, when everybody was kind of really on pins and needles about what was going on, that's when I was like, all right, this feels like a medical intervention type deal. And also, I have massive degrees of heart problems in my family. Like multiple family members have passed away from heart related stuff. And so I kind of knew that I had to take it seriously. And, you know, it only took me a few months to go get that checked out.
6 months. You had chest pains.
No, a few months. I finally, well, at the time it was like, you didn't really want to go to the hospital, you know, because my Mount Sinai is where I get, that's, you know, that's in my network and all that. And it's like, do I really want to deal with, you know, going to the hospital right now when everything is so nuts?
Sure.
And so finally around like March, I think, I went and got it checked out. Or, you know, that's when I finally had my EKG and my CAT scan. And it was around mid-March when they're like, all right, this is something.
Wow.
Like, I wasn't, like, rushed to the hospital. It was, like, something they let me schedule. But the dude basically told me, you have to have the surgery. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to be gained by waiting. So we might as well just go for it.
So what did they do?
Basically, what it means is the aorta, which is the main tube coming out of the top of your heart, it gets bigger. It starts getting bigger. And if it ruptures, you're dead. A little bit. But just the tube, the heart, my heart. I was told I have the heart of an 18-year-old.
Oh, okay.
Which means my heart writes terrible poetry. And no.
And has a crush on the math teacher. Yeah.
Exactly. And don't look under my heart's bed, because it's some socks under there you don't want to see. But like Jonathan Larson, the guy who wrote Rent, he died because he had an aortic aneurysm and it was uncaught and it ruptured. And so it's not, you know, it gets bigger and bigger over time. And so they have like some time to know, like, all right, if it gets to this many centimeters, then we've got to like do this right now. And I wasn't quite there yet, but it was going to get there. But what they do is they saw into your chest, you know, and they split you open and they cut a part of your, like, right, mine was right at the stem, like right where it meets the heart.
Yeah.
And heart valves, most people have what they call a tricuspid valve, which okay. basically looks like a Mercedes symbol, where it's like okay. three flaps that open and close. Mm-hmm. I have what they call a bicuspid valve, which is just two flaps, and apparently that makes you more susceptible to this particular genetic defect.
And did you not know you had that until they
I did not.
Cut you open?
Mm-mm, I did not know that. Wow. He didn't even know, even after my CAT scan and all that, they didn't know for sure that's what it was. Sometimes people have Marfan syndrome, which is gigantism. That's mm-hmm. another thing that, but I am not like weirdly tall and thin, so I knew that really wasn't
right.
a thing. So yeah, so then they replaced it with, I don't know, like a hollowed out USB cord or something, and now then they sew you back up, and mostly a lot of the recovery is just your breastbone healing.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And how much pain were you in after? Was it like really, was it like a nose job? Like how bad was the pain?
No, it's brutal.
It's bad.
I mean, it's brutal. Oh, I mean, really? I was in the hospital for about a week. And then, you know, for a few, I was able to walk pretty quickly, but I wasn't able to pick anything up. I was supposed to not pick anything up heavier than 5 pounds. Mm. Like I couldn't walk the dogs and you know, and then it just gets better over time. You know, I was sleeping out in the recliner for a few weeks because mm-hmm. you can't roll, you can't move onto your stomach or anything like
wow.
that. And, but yeah, but eventually now it's like firmly in the annoying stage. Like it's an annoyance. It hurts. Like when I sneeze, it feels like a grenade went off in my chest.
Right, right.
But, still,
will that go away? I mean, do you heal completely eventually, or
that's what they tell me. It feels okay. hard to believe right now because it feels like it's been forever and it's still, you know, uncomfortable. But you know, I'm out doing sets. I'm out living a relatively normal life. Like I tried going out for a run last week. It was pathetic, beyond pathetic. I couldn't even. I ran like a half a mile, and then I was just like, you know,
no.
I think I ran a mile and a half total, but I took like breaks every quarter mile.
Right, right.
But that's, you know,
pretty ambitious. I'd be like, no, can't, heart, sorry.
Well, mm-hmm. I played that game for a long time, but
right.
my pants seem to have they seem to be encouraging me to start taking the exercise thing a little more seriously. I was kind of hoping that they would tell me, like that my surgeon would tell me, like, you got to change your life, and from now on mm-hmm. it's only boneless, you know, skinless chicken breasts and vegetables, and he was like, no. He's like, you know, your heart is fine. You don't have any blockages. This is right. a genetic thing. He's like, I mean, you should eat well and lose weight, but you don't have to because of this. He's like, well, that's not going to make me do it.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
I need a gun to my head.
So I need to I almost him. Die. Not like we need to fix this and then you'll
yes,
be fine.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I was really hoping he was going to force me to stop drinking, but that has not been the case.
Wow. Thank so you for sharing that with us. That's interesting.
You're going to have a scar now forever now.
Yeah, what's really awful about the scar is it's pretty long. It's about like 6 or 7 inches long. And then there's a little scar under it where the drainage tube, and I'm sorry to no. gross you out, but
no, this is interesting.
So I have like an exclamation point in the middle of my chest now. And not yes. only that, the scar is ever so slightly not straight.
Oh
God.
Drives me crazy.
Oh, you're like Doc, like OCD over here. You can't.
Yeah,
you can't.
It goes straight up, and then right at the top, it sort of tilts to the left, and it drives me nuts.
Oh, man.
And I'm Irish. I don't have enough chest hair to cover that up.
No.
So.
Right? No.
I'm going to be looking at every day for the rest of my life.
It's getting my OCD going right now.
Oh, brutal. It's brutal.
Well, see, I blame it on you lost a lot of weight once you got married. So
I got married, it was when I lost a lot of weight. Well, I've gained much of it back. Mm-hmm. Like it's the quarantine was not kind to my eating habits or
none of us.
Just, yeah.
yeah.
And, you know, and that's fine. I know it's true of a lot of people, but it's hard because I am still, you know, people talk about how like, oh, I'm not used to wearing normal clothes again. It's like, I can't wear normal clothes. None yeah. of the, there's not a, like, there was a wedding about 3 weeks after I got out of the hospital that Cambry, my wife, really wanted us to go to. And I ended up not being able to physically do it. But I won't lie. There was a little part of me was like, I don't have anything. I'm not going
to buy
a
wear?
Fat
yeah,
suit.
Right.
Like, I'm not
yeah.
going to buy a suit just for one wedding.
Right.
Just a tarp.
We have a bunch of listeners who were really kind enough to participate in this little joke, this little experiment for us. And we asked them to tell us a story that either happened to them while they were drunk as an adult or something they did as a little kid.
Okay.
So I'm going to have them tell the story. and you guess whether the story happened when they were a little kid or were they a drunk adult.
What about a drunk child? Is that an option?
I didn't give that option. I didn't, you know, not a lot of our listeners grew up in France, so I figured not a good option there. Yeah. Okay, so let's do Samantha first.
I seriously had a meltdown because I was crying hysterically because of my pet parrot was going to have to live his life without his hands.
Okay, her pet parrot.
Was going to have to live life without pants? Is that what she said?
Yes.
Boy, I mean, you got to hope that's a childhood thing, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to go with childhood on
I'm
that.
I'm going to go child on that.
Okay, Samantha?
I was a drunk adult. It was the ridiculous part is that I made two of my drunk girlfriends cry with me for the same reason.
It seems like she may have other issues that she's projecting onto that bird.
Does seem like it, yeah.
Like, may not really have to do with the parrot at the end of the day.
And the fact that she got two other drunk friends to cry is just like, women love crying together, and if we're drunk, forget it. Like, game on.
Yeah,
we're there. All right, so now let's hear from Jason.
I decided to go out wearing my mom's clothes. And it was 2 hours before anyone really said anything. Also, I'm not a cross-dresser.
Okay, so did Jason do that as a drunk adult, or do you do it when he was a little kid?
Well, the fact that he brought up the I'm not a cross-dresser at the end leads me to think it happened recently. But I used to go into my mom's closet and do dress-up all the time when I was a kid. And I am not a cross-dresser that I know of. I don't even know if that's the proper term in 2021, probably not. But I'm going to say that was a kid thing.
Me too.
Anthony?
Yeah.
Kid thing? Okay. All right,
I
Jason?
I was a little kid. That's right. Yeah. I went out to play at one of my girlfriend's houses. Her mom saw us playing, but just thought I was another girl from the block. It wasn't until we had a snack later on that her mom noticed it all. And she just thought it was cute.
Yeah.
Yep. And you know what? It was.
Yes, Jason. It was. If Christian says it was cute, it was cute. All right, Michelle, what's your story?
I was dancing, and I tried sliding on my knees across a rubber dance floor. And I came to an immediate stop. I mean, I skinned my knees. I split my dress. It was the worst.
All right, so did Michelle do that little dance and skin her knees and split her dress when she was a little kid, or is that a classic drunk adult story?
Classic drunk adult.
Yeah, I agree.
I think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, Michelle.
I was actually in the fourth grade, and I was turning it up not to impress a boy I had a crush on, and needless to say, he never even noticed until I started crying. Shocking that we never got together.
Yeah, the fourth grade trying to impress a boy.
Well, there's nothing stopping you, ma'am, from reliving that as a drunk adult. There's no reason to keep that memory fossilized in your childhood.
That's a good point. All right, let's hear from Marcus.
So I woke up with an eight-year-old kid lining up action figures around my body saying, "Don't wake the giant."
Oh. That has to be a drunk adult.
Yeah, that sounds like maybe a little daddy had a few at the barbecue in the afternoon and maybe had to take a nap around 4 o'clock.
Funny you would say that. Marcus?
I was a drunk adult who passed out at a friend's cookout, and as far as I made it, it was the living room floor, and I woke up with some kid around me with a bunch of ex men.
I called that.
You called it. I love the fact that you knew it was a cookout as well.
I just had a vibe. I had a vibe.
How did you know that?
Marcus just sounds like somebody who gets drunk at barbecues.
Wow.
And here's the last one. Let's hear from Allison.
During a birthday party for my dad, I pushed my sister into the pool while she was eating a chocolate cupcake. So it looked like there was a poo explosion. We were cracking up, but our mom got really upset.
All right.
Explosion.
So did that happen to Allison as a drunk adult or when she was a little kid?
That could go either way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It feels naturally like a kid thing. And the fact that she called it a poo explosion would be a very childlike way of describing that. So I'm going to go a child thing.
Like your deduction there, Anthony.
I was a little kid, and my mom didn't think it was very cute.
Poo explosions are never very cute.
I don't know. Have you ever seen Poo Explosion live? They're really great.
Yes, I have two kids, and no, it's not cute.